G'day expats and welcome back to Expat Chat. I think it's pretty safe to say that we're off to a pretty busy start to this year. Episode 6.
Yes.
Apologies for the radio silence. As you can imagine, when we have events like elections and also to the end of financial year rapidly approaching, it becomes an incredibly busy time for us. So we saw the result on Saturday and I think it's a safe assumption to say that expats should be happy with the result. Just from a financial perspective, there's obviously other things which we won't go into. We're not a political show. But as far as the bottom, the back pocket's concerned, I think it was a good result.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I've put that down as one of the things to just quickly touch base on as the agenda. And I'll just quickly run through the agenda today.
Please do,
I want to touch base on expat health insurance.
Okay,
what is it? How it operates? You know, is it worth it?
Yep.
That's going to actually lead into this funny article that I've seen on news.com.au.
Okay.
Probably not the most reputable source.
The purveyor of knowledge, yes. Yep.
Just what summer expats have been doing, which I thought was quite clever, but it's also an issue. Election wrap-up, just what it means for expats, just a quick rundown. Just want to touch base on Facebook groups, on what you hear and see.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I've seen some nasty things. And then just a quick update on the Insight survey, because it's closing soon.
That's right.
And then, you know, end of financial year is approaching, so maybe just remembering that you've got to lodge. You know, if you haven't lodged and this is your first time overseas, tax residency, those sort of things. And then I briefly, lastly, just want to touch base on, you know, the interest rate cut that is coming.
Yes. Yeah, well, the dollar's showing it, isn't it? So
exactly. And what it means for the Australian dollar. So let's kick start. So firstly, Brett,
before we get there, we've got to go through the disclaimers, remember?
Yeah,
of course. We've got to keep the powers that be that happy. So
for those
who are listening on the podcast and not watching on the email, watching on YouTube or Facebook, this information is general in nature, and please don't use it as your own personal advice. Mm-hmm. Always seek the advice of a registered professional.
Exactly right. No, glad we got that one out.
Yep, no, that's right, exactly. We've got to keep those people happy, you know?
Exactly. So expat health insurance.
Yep.
I mean, I always have consults, inquiries asking me, you know, is it worth getting expat health insurance quote? Is it worth getting it? Even just inquiries come through on the website saying, I need this quote.
Yep.
And it's just like, okay, well, do you understand what it is and what kind of benefit it's providing? I don't know too many providers in Australia that do it.
Look, we've in the past done a bit of work with NIB.
Okay.
Yep. And it's more like life insurance than it is like health insurance.
Okay.
So when you're a member of Medibank Private, Bupa, and those sort of health funds in Australia, that's health insurance.
Yep.
But if you, and NIB is one of the few Australian companies to offer expat cover.
For worldwide, yep.
Yep. And when you do that, what essentially happens is that insurance is actually general insurance.
Yep.
And it is underwritten at time of policy.
Oh, okay.
So what it means is... your guaranteed cover when you're away.
Yep.
Now, there's always that trade-off
because
it's not exactly as cheap as insurance is in Australia.
No. Yeah.
You can mitigate some of the costs by excluding the US if you're not going there. But essentially, you know, from past dealings with NIB, there's three levels of packages. Like most plans, you can select your different packages.
Yep.
The benefit of using someone like NIB versus an overseas provider is, as we know, if you have private health insurance in Australia, you can only really suspend your insurance for 1 or 2 years.
Yes.
And then after that, some insurers don't let you keep suspending it.
No, they don't.
If you go with NIB, so let's say, for example, you know in 6 months' time you're going to go overseas, you move your health insurance across to NIB, and then you can convert that health insurance into general expat cover.
Yep.
And then if you're away for 10 years, when you come back, that cover converts back into health insurance. There's no change in loadings, all these sort of things, because you've continuous cover.
So, they've got the record that you've maintained some sort of private health cover.
Bingo.
At all times.
Yeah, exactly.
And even probably claims history as well.
Bingo, yeah. Okay. So from their point of view, you're a known entity.
Yeah.
And that's why they're happy to play that game. So, but we have had times where clients have sought out quotes who haven't been exposed to the cost of overseas health insurance before. And have fallen off their chairs when they see the numbers coming through.
Listen, and I'm happy to provide a bit of an insight on the cost, to be honest, because I had a quote about 4 months ago. It really made me fall off my chair, to be honest.
Yeah.
So it was a mum and dad heading to Singapore, actually, two kids. They excluded the US.
Yep.
The premium came to just over 12,000 Australian
a year.
So, very high. I mean, I was speechless when I saw it, to be honest.
It is a lot, but I think what people forget too is the cost of health insurance in Australia has actually been going up at a rate of 2 or 3 times the rate of inflation.
Yeah.
So okay. I know personally for my, we're with Medibank Private.
Yep.
And we pay about $500 a month for the family.
Yep. Okay.
So it's $1,000 a month is a lot of money.
Yep.
But you are getting worldwide health cover.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think,
whereas $500 a month only covers for me in Australia.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, also the purpose of private health here in Australia is, you know, the Medicare levy, rebate, all those sort of things. So you're more incentivized to pick it up. Whereas you're not going to get a tax benefit anywhere in the around the world for having expat cover, even if you're residing in Singapore, the US, wherever it might be.
It's peace of mind.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay, so it's case by case. I mean, it's going to be a lot cheaper for an individual if they're not married or anything like that, where it could be worth it.
Yep.
And I'd say usually on those providers, they'll have a list of different medical centres that you can actually go to.
That's right.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's mainly the majors, like Bupa, NIB.
Well, I know with NIB, you can pretty much not go to almost anyone, but you can go to anyone.
Yep.
And then you have a limit and you just give them your receipt and you claim it back.
Ah, okay. Yeah,
so that's why it's a bit different from standard health insurance, where you fund the whole thing yourself,
but
then you take your receipt in and they'll pay you a percentage back.
Okay. And this is a good segue into this article I read.
Yeah, I think I know the article. Bali?
It was. Yeah. I think it might have been a Facebook group in Bali. So apparently a lot of people, a lot of expats, not just Bali, some other countries, they've been taking out travel insurance, but they've been using fake Australian addresses so they can acquire the policy.
Okay.
And then when they're in the Bali or other places,
so they're actually living in Bali, but they're buying Australian insurance.
Yeah, so they lie about to the individual that sets them up on the travel insurance. They give a fake Australian address, and then, you know, if they've got gastro or something, they'll go and make a claim. They'll, you know, take a picture, send that back over to the Australian travel insurance company, and then they'll remit them the amount.
Yep.
But they're holding these travel insurance policies for a very long time, and you know,
but they're not actually back in Australia. Yeah.
Not at all. I mean, I see two issues. I mean, eventually they're going to catch you out.
Yep.
And secondly, you're putting down a fake Australian address, and anything of that nature is ever provided to the ATO, tax residency. Residency issue. Let's cause it into question. Okay, they're living over there, but hang on. Take out a travel insurance policy.
What are your behaviours are? They're matching that of an Australian resident who's going overseas on holiday.
Exactly right. So it's a funny article, and I must say it's quite creative the way people are jigging it. And it's amusing because it's something that's been in these Facebook groups.
Yep.
And now another segue. I mean, around the world, there's all these Facebook groups.
We should have this danger sign flashing, you know, every time we say Facebook group. Yeah,
yeah. Australian expats in Germany, Australian expats in London. Like, there's plenty of them, there's thousands, and there's thousands of members. And I suppose, you know, we've seen pretty ugly things that have been put up in those.
Oh, makes your blood turn, yeah.
Oh, but just the fact that people are happy and willing to take capital gains tax advice from someone that's not a registered accountant. They're just, someone that's a member of that group.
And they heard it from so-and-so, and off we go.
And they'll take that advice. I mean, the scariest ones that I see are actually in the US and the filings and the different forms because that's
Oh, look, it's funny how there was one that went on the other day in one of the US groups, and it was a debate about, if you're about to leave the US, do you draw down your 401k before you go or after you go?
Yeah.
And I didn't count the numbers, but I would say 80% of the responses actually said, no, do it when you're back in Australia.
Ooh, okay.
Which is the worst thing you can do.
Yeah. I mean, double taxation.
Exactly. Yeah, so then suddenly you've got ATO and the IRS to contend with.
As
opposed to, you know, if you do it in the US, it's just the IRS.
Yeah.
And that was a classic case in point. You know, those people who probably thought they were doing the right thing, you know, their rudimentary understanding of what they've been through.
Yep.
May cost this person 5, 10, 15, 20,000, depending how big their 401k is.
Yeah.
But it could be, just that something so simple as a question that leads you off into something that costs you a fortune to pay.
Yeah, well, I took a consult, and it's funny they bring up the 401k, probably, I reckon it would have been 6 weeks ago, and it was from an individual. I think the guy was 55. He's been back in Australia for a long time, and he's just withdrawn $140,000 US 401k.
Wow.
I was like, did you get any advice before you did this? Yeah. He's like, no, you know, I could see that I could log on. I've got an American bank account that I can use. So I just withdrew the whole thing. I was like, well, have you done any tax planning? Have you spoken to a tax accountant? He's like, no, I'm doing all that now. I'm like, oh, you know, shit.
How do I say that?
I just educate them the way it's going to be taxed. You know, IRS first is going to get their piece of the pie. You're under 59.5. There's a 10% penalty tax there. You know, non-resident alien tax. And then, you'll get a foreign tax credit here in Australia. And then I sort of had to get a bit of an idea of his...
earnings in Australia.
Yeah, and he's actually in the highest marginal tax rate.
So
he's on a good wicket. So I just said, listen, it's quite likely that you're going to lose half your balance in tax. And he's like, it was a hard call. And, you know, I'm happy being honest and just giving the situation because now he can try and do some planning in the background. But seek advice before you do something like that because he's now lost half that retirement account.
Caught up with a colleague of ours the other day. He does a lot of our account work in the US.
Yep.
And he was just full of horror stories about people taking action without seeking advice.
Yep.
You know, and the best one he gave was a couple that had a self-managed super fund with ETFs through it, which we know is a big no-no on the SMSF side and also on the ETF side with the US clients.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Suddenly you got a foreign grantor trust combined with PFICs.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's the Holy Trinity.
Yeah.
So they thought they'd do the right thing without seeking advice, and they did 100% drawdown of the super fund.
Yeah, okay.
And close the super fund.
To wind it down.
And they said, good news, we've fixed that problem. Problem is, when you do that 100% drawdown from your super fund,
yep,
suddenly that balance is assessable income in the United States.
Yep.
So these people drew down $750,000.
Wow.
And then now have to pay income tax on that $750,000 in the US. And they thought they were doing the right thing.
Yeah, okay. But they didn't seek any advice.
That's right. They came to them after and they said, you be proud of us, we did this.
We thought we sorted it.
Yeah.
No, you've actually just created a serious tax event. Yeah.
Great example. Good intentions doesn't equal good financial outcomes.
No, not at all. All right, Brett. So I want to bring us back around now because you and I both know we can go on tangents regarding US matters.
Hours, yes.
Yep. So I just want to come back to the election wrap up.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I'm happy being honest. I'm pretty happy that Labor didn't get in.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the rules around capital gains tax, trust, taxation, removing personal tax deductible contributions, a lot of the things they wanted to make changes to, I could see it impacting our whole client base, to be honest.
Mm. And that's the thing. I think from a political point of view, taking our personal political hats off, but from a company's political standpoint, all we care about is expats.
Exactly.
So whichever party has the best results, and you know, I said it not too long ago when Labor came out and supported expats with regards to the main residence exemption.
Yep.
You know, I was all for Labor.
Yep.
But in the election, from an expat's point of view, I was all for the Libs because, you know, what we're going to see is, and to me, I think the reason they lost the vote was they tried to do too much.
Yeah.
There was everyone had a crosshair on them.
Yeah.
And whether it was franking credits, whether it was negative gearing, whether it was, you know,
I feel like Liberal were just sitting back as well.
Yeah.
So you know what? You can announce all these things. We know how it's going to go. We know how it's going to play out. It's probably why there was such a safe budget as well.
It is. And I think, you know, Bill Shorten probably thought what he was doing was an altruistic approach to the greater Australia.
Yep.
But I think everyone's concern was, what price are they going to pay personally to fund this grand vision of what he was proposing? And you know, we all know right now, cost of living is as high as it's ever been.
Yep.
1 in 20 mortgages are in distress.
Yes.
You know, people haven't got the luxury of being able to, you know, vote for the environment when they can't put foot on the table.
Yeah.
So I think, to me, Saturday's result, double thumbs up for expats.
Yep.
Because, you know, even though I'm really skeptical of whether Libs will bring back the MRE because they haven't officially walked away from it yet.
Yeah, I know.
And, anyway, we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, probably won't go into it, but MRE is just main residence exemption and how they wanted to remove it for expats.
Yep.
Yeah, but we might see 2.0 or they might throw it out.
Yep. Let's hope they throw it out.
So, no, that's good. And now I want to touch base on, you know, end of financial year. It's fast approaching.
Yep.
And with any new expats that have recently gone overseas, you know, this financial year is probably the year that you'll be declaring that you're a non-resident.
Yep.
And the best way to do it is actually through the tax system, through this tax return that you're going to lodge, whether it be yourself or your accountant. I always say to any consult that I have, if it's your first year overseas, getting an accountant to do it properly. You want it done properly from the get-go.
You want a nice little bow on top. You want to tie it off perfectly, yeah.
Exactly right. You want to make sure it's done correctly so you don't have to go back 5 years later and try and amend that and go, you know, crap, I was never declared a non-resident.
That's right.
This is why I'm receiving a letter from the ATO about this, you know, income that I've received while I'm in Saudi Arabia or something.
Yep.
So do it correctly. Further on that, if you're already an expat and you've got a HECS debt, remember, you've got to file. You've got to file that worldwide income.
Not only that, but you're meant to have told them within 7 days of moving what your new overseas contact details are.
Yep.
So, but yeah, once that as well as, you know, and people, you know, we meet people every week who have HECS debts and don't realise.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've had plenty of people I've talked to where they've been over a few years, they haven't done a HECS lodgement. It's like, well, you're meant to do one last year. I was like, I'm not going to lie, you're going to be up for a little bit. And there's probably going to be a fine or maybe some interest on that as well.
Yep. Big question is how connected the intergovernment agencies are. You know, certainly I've heard from a number of reputable sources that the ATO is dialed in with immigration, and their intention is if you fly back into the country and haven't done this lodgement, $3,000 fine on the spot.
Yeah, okay, geez, wow.
So, yeah, and that $3,000 doesn't go off your HECS debt.
No.
You've got to do it on top of what you owe them. So it's something, you know, look, face up, you got schooling for free.
Yep.
You know, it's you've had a free kick for many years as an expat not to pay it.
Yep.
You just get to pay it.
Yep. Yeah, it's time to, exactly right. Okay. So, yeah, touching base, ATO, end of financial year. Let's get those tax returns in. Don't forget about them because longer you leave it, the harder it gets. Now, I want to touch base on the Insights survey.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's a sprint to the finish now. Exactly. So what are we, 23rd? So we're looking at 8 days until the survey closes off.
Yep.
Checked it this morning, 2,770 responses.
Amazing. Yep. Just pause on that.
Go.
Because we could have first-time listeners and they won't know what this is.
Okay. So what we're doing is it's essential a testing the temperature of expats throughout the world.
Yep.
We're talking on issues of career, finance, family, lifestyle.
Yep.
And just generally, you know, your experiences. And, you know, the survey really covers all bases. So we're asking people who are on their first expat assignment and also veterans as well. We want to hear from everyone because for us, the thing that really boils our blood is when we see not only misinformation come out of Canberra as to what an expat is.
Yes.
You know, everyone thinks seven-figure salaries, traveling the world. The 2018 survey clearly showed that the most popular sector for work for an expat is education.
Education, yep.
Now, I don't know many teachers on seven figures, but maybe some out there working for some shake or something like that, but good on them. Yep. But yeah, it's really, the survey's there for two reasons. A, so that when we see nonsense coming out of Canberra, we have hard data we can show them and say, hey guys, you think they're X, but they're actually Y.
Yep.
Secondly, there's an Australian resident moving overseas every 1 minute and 49 seconds, according to the Australian Bureau stats. By getting this information, and we just turn around, we actually put in a report and we put on our webpage, it enables someone moving to Cambodia or Dubai or London to see what their fellow expats are saying about living there.
Yep.
Is it great for their career?
Yep.
Is it great for their family? Is it great for lifestyle?
Yep.
You know, there's 1,000 blogs out there about expats and experiences, but they're not always written by an Australian expat or from that tense.
No,
so the great thing at this is, and we're getting a collective number, you know, obviously 2,770 people, a lot of feedback as to whether that country, that city is a good place to move.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, you'd rather know that before you went, or if you did know it, at least be prepared for it. And then we also address things like, you know, the cost of living. You know, is schooling more expensive than Australia?
Yep.
Is healthcare, groceries, transport, everything? And by breaking it down into some very easy to digest, you know, diagrams and a quick report, people can now suddenly go, great, okay, I'm moving to Dubai, rightio, salaries are good, taxes low, fantastic, but wow, look at accommodation and schooling.
Yeah. Okay.
So when they are preparing to go there, they've at least got a bit of an idea as to what to expect.
Yep.
So, yeah, so the survey is there for two, you know, two reasons. A, to educate the government because they're certainly far behind. But B, and most importantly, to help expats not only move overseas for the first time, but if you're relocating from San Francisco to Shanghai, you'd want to know what Shanghai is like.
Yeah, exactly right. You want that, as I say, insight. You want to know exactly what it's like there on the ground. At the moment, how many countries have we got that are, or how many Aussie expats from different countries. So
85 countries.
Yeah, well, okay. And based on the hard data, how many country reports do you think we'll be able to do?
Yep, I think we've lifted the minimum reporting standard from last year.
As the
numbers are going up, we've got to do that as well. So we want to make sure that the results are statistically significant. Say that after a few beers. We've lifted it up now. Yep. Based on the new hard floor, we're looking at least 25 countries.
Yeah, great.
Okay. Hoping to have maybe 30. Yep. So implore everyone out there, you know, I'll put a link in the show notes and a link in the description below.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't done the survey, it will mean the world to us if you just jump on. It takes 8-9 minutes of your time. The responses are completely anonymous, so we're not going to come and track you down. And the only thing we ask is at the end, if you do want to leave your details, we'll send you a copy of the report when it's finished. But apart from that, you can leave that blank and fill everything else in.
Yep.
We're not going to find you. The ATO is not going to find. Like, I've seen some conspiracy theories out there.
Yep.
This to us is an altruistic thing. It actually costs us money to do.
Yep.
But we have heard for the last 8 years, time and time again, from expats and soon to be expats about a lack of information out there. And this is, I guess, our way of trying to plug that gap and provide a service which we think is pretty valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, no, that's great. So obviously 7 days, if you haven't done it, please get on it, because I mean the data is just invaluable.
Look, it is. It's something that, you know, we've actually had some pretty high level organizations reach out to us, which you'll probably see in the press and what we do in the coming months. And it's great to see other organizations who are as passionate about Atlas. You know, we've talked about Advance before.
Yeah.
You know, great guys and girls. You know, they'd really go out there to bat for expats and very take things on at a head on at a high level too.
Mm.
You know, they're in Canberra. They're talking to governments and stuff like that. So any way that we can help them, fantastic. And to us, it's just, you know, it's getting those collective voices together from expats to work out, you know, is everyone happy? Is everyone sad? Like, you know, I mean, it's where the diaspora is so diverse and so spread out, it's very hard to get that feeling. And different cities and different countries shift all the time. Mm. So that's the other thing about the survey, which we'll do every year. This is our second year, is we'll be able to, you know, test the temperature over 10 years and say, well, Hong Kong was hot in 2018, 2019, but look, people started to leave in 2020.
Yep.
What was the reason? Pollution. Yeah, like you can
say, you'll be able to tie it to even legislation changes. Maybe they're taxing foreign residents very differently.
Yeah, exactly. So it's it's a labor of love.
Yeah.
You know, we don't make any money from it.
No.
But something that we're playing the long game on, and the more data we can gather, the more information we can, you know, disseminate.
Yep. All right, well, moving forward, I saw this random article actually recently, and it is something that will impact Aussie expats, and you might have seen it as well. It's about last month, Westpac Singapore and Westpac Hong Kong started writing to their customers advising that they're planning to completely close down their remaining mortgage business and ask them to refinance their loans before the end of September 2019. So pretty alarming for a lot of expats that are using them, because I know I've had plenty of consults where people have mentioned that they're using them, especially in Singapore.
Actually. Singapore's been a big one,
Yeah, so they're closing up shop, which means, you know, going to have to either look back to Australia.
And that follows. Remember, NAB came out of Singapore about a year ago as well too. So they're all starting to wind back. I mean, they're too busy putting out bushfires in Australia after the Royal Commission.
Yep.
So all these little outposts that are more of a rounding error than the revenue driver to them.
Yeah.
It's just an annoyance and they just want to get rid of it.
Yeah, it sounds like they're getting rid of it because it could always be maybe a compliance risk as well.
And that's right.
You know, they can turn around and go, oh no, that rounding error has actually just cost us millions and millions of dollars.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So thought I'd just give individuals the heads up, just because...
If you have a Westpac mortgage in those countries,
Might
want to start to the process of looking
elsewhere. Yeah, absolutely. And then last item I wanted to touch base on, because it's coming, is an interest rate cut.
Yes.
I mean, I was reading the Financial Review now. I mean, there's rumours it could happen next month.
Yeah. And I think the dollar's pricing that in, it's down at 68.26 to the US. Yeah, great result for expats in repatriating capital.
Or any expat that has gets paid in a currency that's tethered to the US dollar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, whether that's Hong Kong dollars or dirhams or you know, those sort of things.
Yeah.
I think they also, you know, it's actually good for the Australian economy.
Yeah.
You know, we are an exporting country by nature.
Yep.
Fun fact here, technically speaking, we are a third world country because we are an exporter.
Yep.
So just something to throw out there from the economic students. But obviously when you think about our, you know, wheat livestock,
yep.
Resources in terms of iron ore and those sort of things.
Say resources is a big one.
You know, and you've combined the dollar down at 68 and the price of iron ore now above $100 a ton.
Yeah.
So BHP and Rio are having a field day right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But because they went through that pain point for the last 3 or 4 years, they've actually dropped their cost of production by $20 a ton.
Yeah, okay.
So they're actually more efficient now and they've got a lower dollar and they've got a higher iron ore price.
They'll be loving it. So, I mean, it's likely that we'll probably see, I mean, I don't know how we would even get such data, but maybe a lot of money coming into Australia.
Yeah.
In the next 6 months. And that article that I was reading, Financial Review, I mean, they were talking about 3 rate cuts going as low as 0.5.
I think we've got the benefit of hindsight in terms of looking at what happened with Europe and what happened in the US.
Yep.
You know, when rates get down to a certain level, the rate cut loses its effectiveness.
Yeah.
Look at the United States. They had to use QE to bolster that because they cut it to zero and still didn't make a difference.
Yeah.
So, to me, you know, I don't think we'll go that hard.
Yep.
And I think if anything, if it does dip, I think they'll have their finger poised ready to raise it at the first sign of growth. I mean, I was reading an article today that talked about economic growth getting back to 2.75% next year. So I can't see 0.5. Yeah, I know there's people who love to make a name for themselves by making these grandiose statements because the funny thing is, if they get it right, they're geniuses. And if they get it wrong, people forget who said it anyway.
Yeah.
So
they've
got nothing on the line. But look, I think rate cut next week is certainly on the cards. Mm. It will depend on employment growth. It will depend on unemployment.
Yep.
So if we see a weakening in that number, lock it in.
Yep.
But if we see further weakening,
could keep going. Yeah, okay. And I mean, I suppose it does give, obviously, a lot of Aussie expats that are paid in those currencies the opportunity to send money home. They're going to get a good rate return.
Yep.
They're accruing wealth in their home currency. And I mean, further on that, it's going to translate to mortgages, interest rates. I mean, you know, we could see interest rates at an all-time low, and it could mean that there's going to be opportunities for you to maybe go and speak to your mortgage broker, refinance, maybe lock in a fixed period for 3 years or...
Unless you're not a US client, remember that one?
Yeah.
So US clients, land rebasing, so you don't want to pay out those loans. But look, I mean, I think expats are in a bit of a juxtaposition right now in terms of their loans because, yes, interest rates are falling, but expat mortgage rates, from what I've seen, are actually going up.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're tightening. Or, I mean, a lot of the big four, they're tightening who they lend to.
Yeah.
And if you're an expat, they, regardless of you wanting to refinance, they might just say no.
Mm, that's right.
Yeah.
And in actual fact, you can't compare an expat's mortgage rate to a resident's mortgage rate.
No.
They're two very different things. So
not at all.
It's like small business loans.
Yep.
You know, there is no correlation to the mortgage rate.
No.
They're high and they've always been high and they won't come down, but they'll go up quickly if other ones go up. So, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that expats are going to feel is their loss of bargaining power.
Yeah, yep.
And, you know, not being able to walk into a branch and say, you know, Westpac are offering me 3%, I want 2.75 from you.
Yeah, it's like, well, actually, we're going to make it 6%.
Exactly, that's right.
Because I've seen some with 6%.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it, to be honest.
The last three I've seen in the last week is 5.8, 5.7, and 5.9.
Oh, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You'd hope they're paying interest only, but even then, like, that's ridiculous.
Yep.
Like, just from the cash flow point of view, I mean, that property will be negatively geared.
Of course, yeah.
So there's not too much of a benefit there. But yeah, I mean, those expats that can refinance in the coming months, I mean, you know, whether you talk to your big four banks or you use someone that's experienced in that manner, it's definitely worth just going through the pre-assessment and finding out. Because if you can lock at an interest rate, which, you know, has you at 5.8%, but then suddenly it's 4.8%, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, that's the, you know, when you look at the dollar difference, over a 25-year loan or a 20-year loan or even 10-year loan, huge.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. And I mean, if a lot of expats right now, I will say this because it's probably something that a lot of people aren't really thinking of, if they've got a variable interest rate loan that's interest only and it's going to drop, and it's going to drop in line with what the cash rate's going to drop, right now they could have a negatively geared property.
Without realising it, yeah.
And then suddenly that property could accidentally become positively geared, which means when they lodge their tax return maybe next year.
Yeah.
You know, oh, hang on, shit, I've got a little tax bill. How's that occurred?
Exactly. Because it's been negative up until now because their mortgage cost has been so high.
Yeah.
But now their cost of the loan is going down, therefore the deductibles go down.
Yeah.
And as long as the rent doesn't go down,
yeah,
then guess what? Bingo.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think if that happens, it'll be really interesting, but it just means a lot of people are going to be maybe a bit shocked, going, oh, hang on, why am I having to pay, you know, maybe a few thousand tax bill now, because remember, non-residents, 32.5%, that's yep. your tax rate, that's your first tax rate.
On the first dollar.
Yeah.
There is no tax-free threshold, it is 32.5 cents on the dollar.
Yeah, exactly, and I find it sometimes amusing where some people, they still think they have that tax-free threshold.
Yeah.
So listen, you know, but this is one thing the A2 needs to do better, because on the A2 website, it doesn't say non-resident tax rates, it just says foreign resident.
Yep.
And a lot of people don't realise when you're a non-resident, you're a foreign resident.
They think, oh, if you're Chinese or if you're British.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, so just remember, when you become a non-resident, the foreign resident tax rules apply to you.
Definitely. Yeah.
And I mean, a recent case of that was actually some clients that sold a property, sold a property in Brisbane, made a handy capital gain on it. And the foreign resident capital gain withholding tax applied to them.
Yep.
I think that
12%.
Yeah, it was. Well, it used to be 10. Now it's 12.5.
Yeah.
And I think the capital gain that got factored in, because they factored in the main residence exemption, was about 80 or 90 thousand. So they had to 10 to 12 thousand. Can't remember now. To the ATO, but because they are Australian citizens, it'll come out in the wash when they lodge their tax return.
Yep.
I mean, it's just the reason why it's been introduced is the ATO gets a little bit of the piece of the pie now, just in case that foreign resident, you know, the Chinese investors...
Well, that's what was happening. They were selling up it again and then taking all their money back overseas and then saying, catch me if you can.
And not watching that final tax return.
Yeah.
So that's why it's introduced, because it's the way the ATO gets, all right, I'll have some now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if it's not the case that I need to be taking that, then it's going to come as a tax refund.
Bingo. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly right. But, I mean, we'll see what happens over the coming months with those interest rates.
Yeah. Look, I think it's going to be something that, you know, it's very important for expats to watch, because it's going to affect not only your loans, if you've got, you know, any sort of loans, but dollars, in terms of Australian dollars. You know, these sort of things are little bits and pieces that really do make a difference in your financial circumstances.
Yeah, exactly right. So, yeah, it is going to be interesting. And, I mean, if I'll just be really interested to see if, you know, these tax bills start coming through, because the interest rate changes. Remember, there's always ways that you can mitigate that, especially now that Liberal's still in power. You know, personal contributions
and stuff
still on the table.
That 10% rule not coming in, which is great.
Yep, and I mean, they're leaving catch-up concessional contributions as well.
Yeah.
So expats are going to be either use that to offset capital gains or even foreign super fund transfers, depending on what they're looking at and how they do it. So it just means that now that the coalition is still in power, it's allowing for current tax planning strategies.
Or 3 years with certainty.
Yeah. Call yeah, it. Exactly yeah. right.
Yeah. At least we now know where the lay of the land is for the next 3 years.
Yep.
And we can help clients navigate that.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, the catch-up contribution strategy is a great one. You know, balance is less than 500.
Yep.
You can really sort of bank that up.
Yep.
And then use that deduction.
Yep.
When you need to.
Yeah,
and
exactly
and
right.
if you plan ahead, you can always work it out.
Or 125K at a low tax of 15%. That's pretty handy.
I know.
And that's Australian tax out of the super fund. That's amazing.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
But again, you got to have that super balance under 500K. But if you are going to do anything like that, please seek advice. You know, we're just mentioning it just so you know about it.
Like we led at the beginning, always seek advice. And we're not just pushing our own barrow. Talk to anyone who knows about expat stuff.
Yep.
Make sure they know about expat stuff. Don't just say, you know, do you know about it? They've got to understand how it works for expats, because a lot of people say, yeah, of course we know about that.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, we've seen time and time again, people get led down a garden path, either paying for someone to do the research or unintended consequences.
Yeah, I mean, you're just talking about match fit. You know, how many clients they have on their roster that's exactly in your position.
Yeah, so, yeah. How many expats do you look after? Yeah,
yeah, exactly right. Brett, that's actually all I have to run through today.
Okay. No, it's a good one. I think that's a pretty good synopsis.
Yep.
Certainly, once again, thank you for everyone starting to leave reviews on the podcast.
Yep.
And also people who are subscribing to the YouTube channel. So once again, our humble thanks. I will ask, though, those who haven't subscribed or those who haven't reviewed, please do it.
Yep,
because we are getting feedback through. We did get a question from Daniel Borg on the YouTube channel. Totally forgot about that. Let's address that right now.
I can't remember it. Can you remember it?
Yeah, I remember it.
Okay.
So, and I think what he was referring to was the 6-year rule and the temporary absence rule. And, you know, to me, I think where the concern was, or the confusion was you know, it was sort of two subjects in one question.
Yeah, they are completely different. They're not really related at all.
So, it isn't. So do you want to run through quickly?
I'll touch base on temporary absence.
Yep, and I'll do the 6 year.
So
yep.
Temporary absence rule, that's mainly around central management control rules regarding a self-managed super fund. So you can still sometimes maintain a self-managed super fund by being temporarily absent from Australia. And that would be within a period of 2 years, but you do return to Australia for a period of, I think it's consecutive 29 days. And in those 29 days, that's when the ATO would see you as doing all the daily operations, reporting, making all the important decisions of that SMSF.
Yep.
Now, if you blow through that and it's over 2 years, you can still be determined to be temporarily absent. You need a private ruling. Sometimes private rulings can go south and you don't get the favourable treatment. But essentially, 2 years is a general rule around temporary absence. After that, you put someone else as an EPOA. During power of attorney, or you've put someone else as the directors
yep.
of the corporate trustees yeah. within there. But just remember, it's a form of rubber stamping. The ATO frowns upon that now. And yeah. you know, if you get audited, they find out that the individuals running that SMSF have no interest in it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Rubber stamping, you know, you could get fined, you could get wound up. It's 50% of your balance gone, as well yep. as the income. So that's temporary absence rule in a nutshell, but it more so relates to SMSFs and central management control rules. Yeah. Now,
whereas the six-year rule, which yes. I think Daniel's referring to, is the main residence exemption, which applies for both residents and non-residents. And the way it works is, let's say, for example, you had a house in Sydney and you moved either to Brisbane or Barbados.
Okay.
And you continue to hold that property. You put a tenant in, whether you lived in Brisbane or Barbados, as long as you didn't buy a property in either one of those jurisdictions,
yes.
It, that is still your main residence.
Yes.
You can put a tenant in, and for the next 6 years, you can still have to file returns, you still have to disclose the income, mm-hmm. but you don't accrue capital gains tax in that period of time.
Exactly right.
Now, at that six-year mark, you then have a decision to make whether you want to either sell the property and, you know, take your capital gains tax free,
yep.
or you roll it over into the different regime, which is the post 6 year rule.
Yeah.
So very different there. Daniel, I hope that answered your question, but you sort of, you know, certainly reach out to us on the emails as well if you want any further clarify. But yeah, it was temporary absence and 6 year, and I thought, you know.
Yeah, I remember it now, and I wasn't confused. I think maybe you got a bit confused.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Two separate rules, but that's essentially addressing it.
Exactly.
Yeah, in two parts there.
Exactly. So
yeah, that's all.
Righto, guys. Well, thank you very much. We've actually got a bit of some big announcements to make in the coming weeks. So watch this space. I think, it's a first. And
I'm going to call it a game changer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for expats.
Exactly so, right.
Yeah. It's going to be great results for expats, which is all we're about. So hope you enjoyed today's show. And as always, if you have any questions, please leave it in the comments below on YouTube, or certainly email us on the podcast if you're watching along there, mm-hmm. or listening along, I should say, info@atlaswealth.com.au. Yep. And James, thank you very much. And thanks, we'll see you on Expat Chat.
Exactly right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.